I'm Phyllis Brandt, and today we're going to be talking about the delicate instrument of our feelings. And we'll be wondering how long we can stand the hammering, too. I'd like to have us think about that concept of our feelings as an instrument, maybe like a piano, that needs to be tuned in order to play out our messages, to play out our themes, to play out our life. Or another way of looking at it would be an instrument like a gauge, and to watch and be able to gauge. And the more we're tuned into our feelings, the more we are going to be able to grow, to understand ourselves, and to be able to get our needs met. So there's three thoughts about feelings I'd like to cover, and I'll tell you what they are, and then we'll go back and talk a little bit more in detail about them. The first is that our feelings are a source of information for us. They tune us into what's happening in our inner life, and they're also a help in our growth process. The second is that we really are not out of control with our feelings, that we can decide how we're going to act on our feelings, and with practice we can even control the output of our feelings. And the third is that no one really can make us feel anything other than physically touching us. Going back to the first one, that our feelings are a source of information about ourselves, I found that happening for me within maybe 24 hours of the time I came here. And it surprised me, and I had some lessons from it. I'd like to share that with you. On Sunday, during the choir practice for what we were going to be singing during the Eucharist, the song that we were singing, and I asked Ken Simon for a copy because I didn't feel like I could explain to you what happened to me in feelings unless I gave you some of the content. The song that we sang was called Thine the Amen, Thine the Praise, Alleluia's Angels Raise, Thine the Everlasting Head, Thine the Breaking of the Bread, Thine the Glory, Thine the Story, Thine the Harvest, then the Cup, Thine the Vineyard, then the cup is lifted up, lifted up. Well, I was going along doing okay in this song, and I began to sense something coming over me, and that was a feeling of incredible awe, of incredible wonder at the presence of God, and I was beginning to get this feeling of off into eternity and that wonderful joy that we are all going to experience. And as I was singing this, I began to get the little goosebumps. I'm getting it right now, even talking about it. Then partly through the second verse is, gone the nailing, gone the railing, gone the pleading, gone the cry, gone the sighing, gone the dying, what was lost lifted high. And I began to think of the contrast of our faulted world and Scott Peck's statement, life is difficult, and how we are still here working on those difficulties and the pain, the loss, the sorrow that's a part of life, in contrast to the joy and the ecstasy of being in God's presence. A gigantic lump in my throat, and I had tears stinging my eyes, and I thought, gosh, I wonder if I brought enough Kleenex to hold them if this is going to keep happening. But it wasn't pain, it was being moved, it was being touched by something really deep, kind of a vision of a spiritual kind of way, in a spiritual kind of way. Then the next day I went to hear Walt talk about the tale of Elizabeth and the water troll. And I found myself tearing up during that, and I decided, and I've learned that to let the tears flow is not as painful as trying to hold them back. So I just did that, and I noticed a few other people going like this, so I didn't feel like I was the only one. But I was really moved by the incredible beauty of his language, of how he expresses things, and the story of the sacrifice that the troll made, of the deep love that he felt for the girl. And I started to think about, well, what is this? What's happening? Those were within 12 hours of each other. And I realized that I had been really busy this summer, all in very happy, busy ways. I went to Boston to visit my oldest son, who's now working there, and he only has like 6 months that he's working there, so I had a chance to go to a place I'd never been and live in his house for free and tune into his life and see some place I'd always wanted to go. And I went to the Bach Festival in Eugene and heard Garrison Keillor and a lot of really good Bach music, and that was fun. Went to Central Oregon with my sister, where we go to our cousin's cabin every year. And in the midst of all this busyness and all this fun, I really hadn't slowed down. And I think what happened to me in these two experiences was a reminder that if you want to have be in touch with yourself, and if you want to draw on maybe some deep yearnings of inside of you that you're looking at, and that was part of my reason for wanting to come to Holden, was to do some spiritual kind of searching, kind of some sorting, that those feelings and that lump in the throat and those tears were a way of saying, well, now you're here, and now you can let it happen. It was a reminder for me that allowing those feelings was going to be the step in letting some experiences happen, to being open to something. So it was a good reminder for me. In terms of a source of growth for how our feelings can help us, I'm not very scientific, but I found out some information from our science teacher that I'd like to share with you, because I've always wondered, you know, when you're feeling fearful, where is it in your body? You know, is there something that goes on in a scientific way when you're feeling a certain emotion? And I really didn't think there was anything like that, but I found out that there are some answers to that, so I'd like to share that with you to demonstrate the point about our feelings as a source for our growth process. Did you know that our brain has three levels? The most basic part of our brain is called the reticular activator, and it's this part that is the alert system. It's when your adrenaline gets going. It's the fight or flight. The fight or flight part. It's on alert. If you spend your whole time doing this, using this part of your brain, you're going to really burn out your system, because that's high stress to have this adrenaline going. But it's there for your protection, and it's the most basic part of our feeling and a part of our brain. Okay, the second part of our brain is called the limbic system, and that's where our emotions are. So this is the actual spot where emotions come into your consciousness. Now, those emotions can be fear, guilt, anger, sadness, or they can be the more positive ones, love, joy. I did put all these up here just to help us get back into what emotions are. Let's say calm. Now, when you experience love, joy, and calm, you get some endorphins. How many of you know what endorphins are? It's runner's high. It's that feeling of surge of energy and excitement and pleasure. Well, what happens then when you experience your endorphins? You get back, you get up into the next and the highest part of your brain, called the neocortex. When you get up into the neocortex, that's where the thinking takes place. And that's why when you're really angry or sad, it's not a good time to take a final. You can't think as clearly. You know what it feels like when you're in that kind of muddle of emotions? You don't have the same capacity to think. That's because you're down here. Another thing that happens up in the neocortex are transcendent feelings. Whoops, this doesn't spell very well either. And by transcendent feelings, I mean empathy, compassion, peace, altruism, cooperation. So this is where you want to experience a lot of your life. You want to be up in the neocortex where you can think clearly and where you can use those transcendent feelings in relating to other people. It's also where your creative and self-directed behavior comes from. Now, when you deal with your feelings, in other words, you process them, you allow them, you work through them, that also puts you up, when you understand your feelings and allow them, that will release you up until your third level, the neocortex, which gives you all these possibilities. The point I'm trying to make is that if you want to exist up here some parts of your time, you're going to have to allow these kind of things to happen. if you repress your feelings, if you don't allow them to happen, you're going to, instead of really getting rid of them, you're going to get stuck in them. And it will not release you up into the higher levels of your brain. Now that's really scientific, but I think it's really helpful. So let's say you don't allow your feelings. You don't have the attitude toward life that I'm going to let those feelings come along because they're going to help me. They're a signal. They're like a flag going up that I need to attend to something. Or a little gauge that's going, woo, notice me, woo. And when you do allow that, these kind of things happen. If you don't, let's say you repress your feelings. By repress, I mean stuff, cork it up. Don't believe it. Don't allow yourself to experience it. Pretend it isn't happening, disregarding, shove it aside. You are actually, instead of controlling those feelings, you are letting those feelings control you. So our little formula is repress equals obsess. The irony is that they control us while we're all the time believing that we are controlling our emotions. So we can defend ourselves against feelings, and if a lot of our feelings are painful, it really makes sense that we'd want to do that. If all of our feelings are painful, it's not a whole lot of fun to let those feelings out. But by stifling the painful feelings, we also stifle the joyful feelings. People who do that, a woman was talking to me during this spring, and she said, there was a time in my life when I didn't feel anything. I didn't feel low. I didn't feel high. I didn't feel sad. I didn't feel happy. I was like numb. It was like a gray numbness. And you may have had times in your life that were like that, where you're just sort of going along in this monochromatic, monotone kind of existence. Like everything's kind of frozen. And she said, you know, she told me why that was, why that had happened in her life and why that had made sense. But she said it's much more fun not living that way in that frozen feeling. And the problem is if you have a lot of painful feelings, you have to first deal with those before you're going to get to the joyful ones. And sometimes you need help with that, like incredible anger and rage or sadness and great grieving that needs to be done for your inner person. You need help to do that. But the guarantee is that when you get to the other side, that joy will be there. And I really promise you that. That does happen. So our feelings are important to our sense of aliveness. If you don't want to walk around like a refrigerator, you're going to need to allow those feelings and learn from them. Joseph Campbell put it in a much more eloquent way than I can in The Power of Myth. He says, I think that what we're seeking is an experience of being alive so that our life experiences on the purely physical plane will have resonances within our innermost being and reality so that we actually feel the rapture of being alive. Okay, so our first point then is that to allow our feelings, to respect them, to see them as a delicate instrument of help and support and growth and information for who we are and for what we need to do. Okay, our second point then is that we can decide what we're going to do with these feelings, that gauge. We have some control on that gauge. We are not our feelings. We are not our feelings, but we have control over those feelings. And the first part of having control over those feelings, or talking about it, let's talk about opening up their gauge to a really high level of feeling. Let's say we're going to go way over on high on our gauge. Well, there are times when that is really an appropriate thing to do. Maybe like a family wedding, a time of great joy or celebration or exuberance or playfulness, when you just get lost in the feeling of that moment. Some people experience that, some couples experience that in childbirth. You know, incredible feeling of awe at wonder of life, of celebration, exuberance. And that seems really appropriate to me to just let that gauge go all the way and just really let that happen. I think in lovemaking, that really makes a lot of sense. When you're with the person you love and you have a bonded, committed relationship, and you're sharing the pleasure of giving and receiving pleasure, letting that gauge go on high is what it's all about. I think that's really an appropriate thing. I think when Walt today talked about the Lakota Sun Dance, and he talked about being in the sweat lodge and experiencing vicariously or with, compassionately, with the Indian who had been grieving his grandmother and had now made the decision that he could let go of that grief and go on and do the dance, I think Walt had let himself have the gauge on high. And it added to the incredible experience that he had, the meaning that it had for him. Okay. And speaking of grieving, when we are grieving a death, another time to let that gauge go on high is when we're in a position where we can truly let that grief out. When we're with people that will protect us and support us, or we're by ourselves, and we're allowing ourselves that grieving and the different things that we can do to grieve, but to let that gauge go. Because what happens is you don't stay in a feeling forever. There's probably an irony about it because it feels like it. If you're in a heavy, deep emotion, particularly a negative one, there is a fear that I'll never, ever get out. I am going to feel this way the rest of my life. If any of you felt that way and in a grief kind of time, you think, there's no way I'm ever going to get out of this. But the reality is, you have to go through it to get out. There's no getting around it. But going through it, you will come out. If you don't go through it, you may be on the other side, and it may be an obsession, an unfinished part of your life. Now, obsession, I guess I didn't explain that. When you repress it, when you stuff it, when you don't deal with it, it keeps coming back. And it will come out in ways that you don't realize. After my mother died, I was 33. I had just adopted a baby, and my daughter was 4 months old, and I had two sons. We were going to Germany for the summer, where my husband was going to be teaching a CPE class to German clergymen, and I had to rent out our house for the summer. And I was just in this whirl of activity. And I spent some time just in German churches, kind of walking around because I had free time. And one time the organ started playing, and I started crying. And I didn't know why I was crying, but it's because I hadn't taken the time. I had not done any grieving during those 7 weeks from the time for death until the time we left. Can you see my pattern here? I get real busy, and then I don't feel my feelings. I'm seeing this pattern as I'm telling you about it. I try to repress feelings by being busy, and then they sneak back. And one time I went to one of my kids, in fact, it's the same school that Reg's kids go to in Santa Monica, and I went to the Christmas program. The kids were singing, or they could sing Christmas carols at that time. I don't know if you still can. Some areas you can't. They were singing all these Christmas carols, and I was sitting there with tears running down my face. It was still grieving that I had not finished, that I hadn't done from my mother's death. So, you know, as much as I tried because of my busy life and all the things I told myself, I don't have time to get into this. If I get into it, I'll never get out, and I can't take care of my kids. The point was that I had tried to repress it and it didn't work. It just keeps coming out. Sometimes people get incredibly angry over one little thing that's way beyond the situation. And it's probably anger that's piled up and repressed and stuffed and they hadn't dealt with. Okay, so we've talked about letting our gauge go over all the way to high. There are some times, though, when we need to go the opposite direction and certain types of situations. One of those might be people who I call crisis junkies, who thrive on excitement and chaos and disturbing big events, and they make them happen because that gives them an adrenaline high to handle them. And Emotions Anonymous is a place where people get help with that syndrome or that symptom of avoiding themselves, but by always by getting into all these huge amount of emotions. Well, people like that need to go back on the scale. Most of us Northern European types need to go up on the scale, is my feeling. That's probably more common for us. Another person, though, who needs to tone down would be a person who has an anger control problem. And particularly a person who has an anger control problem and they've linked violence with their anger. Or aggression with their anger. Anger is an emotion, Aggression is an action, and they're not the same. But for people who have connected that because of their family modeling, because of habitual kind of behavior, they need to learn how to tone down. They need to go, you know, an anger management kind of workshop, or sometimes court orders people to go to counselors to work that out, to tone down. I think another person that may need to tone down their gauges are somebody who expresses all this emotion over and over and over, and they never do anything about it. Like the mother who will cry and wail because her kids don't do this and they don't appreciate her and whatever, and it just is a repeating and a repeating pattern. Well, then expressing the emotion becomes the dead end. And when I'm talking about allowing an emotion and expressing it, I'm making the assumption that then you see it as a signal and you go, well, what am I going to do now? I've got this signal. I need to do something. I need to make a decision. I need to maybe be assertive. I need to take some kind of action. So expressing the emotion is a part of it, but it's not the whole story. Then you need to take some kind of action. So for people who are expressing anger and throwing tantrums all the time, you say, well, good, look at that. They're expressing all this anger. Well, if it's just this smokescreen or this manipulation or ineffective kind of expression, then that's not what I mean. So for them, they would probably need to tone down the emotion and then look at some action and not get stuck in that step of it. Okay, so if we do agree that allowing ourselves to feel, and you can, you know, totally turn off your feelings. You can get to the point where, can't remember if I've ever been angry in the last 5 years. And people will say that with utter sincerity. And that may be true, that they have turned off enough of their gauge is so rusty that they really don't even pick up on it. Of course, there's steam coming out of their ears, but they don't say they're angry. They don't feel the anger. But if you agree with me that allowing yourself to feel the anger and expressing it and managing it is okay, it is helpful, it's a part of your growth, it will help you understand your relationships with other people and how you're feeling about that relationship, it will help you tune into your inner self. If that's true, then how do you manage these feelings? Because I think a part of what we do is fear. Ugh, if I feel this feeling, I don't know what I'll do with it. So let's talk a little bit about that. How do you manage various kinds of feelings? What do you do when they come up, especially the negative ones, the ones that hurt more? What do you do to manage that? Yeah.
For me, it's essential to say them to somebody that I can trust in. Sometimes, especially because I'm a talker and that's how I work out my problems, I can see a pattern as I'm talking, and I can figure it out when I'm talking. But I also need to get it off my chest.
By just sort of blabbing it out, you began to get some understanding that you might not have had.
I used to blab it out to everybody I saw, and I have learned to pull back on that and say it just for, you know, people that can help. Because I'm really a talker, and so I really did have to learn.
The people at the bus stop weren't particularly interested in all your feelings. Ken?
I would just add one sentence to that. As long as I feel like somebody understands what I'm going through, and I think that's where you're headed, if somebody understands it, then I get free of it if they grasp the reality of what it is.
Okay, good point. Yeah, what do you do?
I do have to work hard at validating it, because I usually come up with lots of reasons why I shouldn't be feeling that way, or why I'm wrong, or something. So once I validate it, it really helps me get over it.
Do you have to, by validating it, do you have to get rid of old messages, oh, you don't really feel that way?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Parents say that to kids, you know. This little kid's walking, being dragged actually by mom through the, you know, grocery store, through the parking lot. And the little kid is going, I'm hungry. And she says, you are not. You just ate breakfast. The little kid goes, oh, thought I was hungry. You know. Now, or put to bed when they're not tired because mom needs a nap, or all those things that all of us moms did. You know, put clothes on kids because we're cold. You know, sweaters on kids. And so invalidating our feelings, if that's happened, then later in, at this time in our life, we need to say, yes, I am. I am feeling really guilty, or I'm feeling really sad, or I'm really feeling envious, or whatever the emotion is. Ruth?
Sometimes if I'm having trouble knowing what feeling is, what's going on, if I'm real stuck, I sing and just get into music. When it's a little closer to the surface, I frequently write.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I usually like to write and have a little more sense of what it is before I talk to somebody.
Just go do the sorting yourself so you're a little clearer about talking.
Yeah.
Do that as a first kind of a step, preliminary step to talking to somebody.
Yeah.
And then I like the point about talking to the right people, you know, the people like Ken mentioned that know will understand. Yeah, be a little careful about who you're going to say it to. And writing is mentioned. Good. Okay?
For me, sometimes, especially with anger, is to monitor my thinking. Because invariably I have said to myself, it's terrible, it's awful, and they should not have done that. I'm driving along in the car and somebody cuts me off. And I can immediately react if I want to. But if I stop and think, okay, what did I just say to myself? Invariably I've said, and made myself angry by the thoughts to myself.
Okay, that's another point we're just going to get to. Yeah. So sometimes monitoring, what is my reaction about, and is it even valid? I could save myself a lot of energy by. Okay, are there ways that you manage feelings or become aware of them?
Sometimes I just pull back and really just get some real quiet time. There's some other activity like read, and I find that it will bubble up to the surface while I'm reading. What really is bothering me will just...
Almost like rather than sitting down and saying, I'm going to think about what this is, it's like releasing and doing something else, and then it has a chance to come.
Seeps through to
the... Walking will do that for me. I'll be aware of things that I wasn't aware of until I'm out there walking. Karen?
I was just going to say running. Sometimes I work it through. Or running and then writing or talking.
Yes.
I think, like she said, the writing or a journal, something like this, or if you're upset about something, writing it down helps you not only just get out what you're thinking, but you can see what it is and where you're at. Put some structure to it so it's controllable and you know what's going on.
And even if you start out saying, I'm so confused, I don't know what I'm going to say, but just keep yourself writing, it draws it out. Okay, good. Another thought.
Another one, prayer. And I think sometimes that's where I go when I'm running too. Mm-hmm. But I think with the sermon the other night, with prayer, I'm just talking to God.
Mm-hmm. Using God as that safe person to talk to. Yeah. Okay. Let's go on then to the third point, and one that we've already gotten a clue on, is that nobody can make us feel anything. It's actually us who make us have our emotions. Let's see if we can put that in kind of a linear way. Okay, we'll start down here with our feelings. Okay, our feelings are created by our thoughts, by our belief system, and by interpretations, like the interpretation about the person in the car. What that means to have somebody cut in. You can say, well, it's probably going to happen a whole bunch of times in my life. I mean, that's how life is. You're driving in, someone's probably going to cut in, so no big deal. Or you can just go, you know, say all the words and get totally furious and vent all your emotions. It's by your interpretation. Or, you know, in other ways, about somebody at work snubs you. You know, you're walking down the hall and they hardly even say anything. Your interpretation could be, boy, they must be lost in their thoughts today. Or the interpretation could be, they hate me, or I said the wrong thing, or I wore the wrong color clothes, or, you know, something like that. So you could be way off in your interpretation. You could spend the whole day stewing and mulling about why this person hates you, and it's totally not based on fact at all. It's your interpretation. Okay, our feelings come from our thoughts and beliefs. our thoughts and beliefs become the basis for our emotional reactions. And our thoughts and beliefs come from our experiences. And as we've talked in previous days about the messages from our families of origin, the things that happened to us, how we were treated, how we were talked to and about and responded to in childhood, they become our idea of who we are and how we are and how people react to us. So all of these are in a sequence that is actually, I'm actually going backwards. So it starts with our experiences. They produce our kinds of thoughts and beliefs about ourselves, about life, about things that happen. And that produces our feelings. So there is a lot of control then, knowing that we can change our thoughts and beliefs. Our experiences, we can reparent ourselves. We can look at things in a different way, in a long process of forgiveness maybe for people who have caused some pain that would have made us have certain thoughts and beliefs, especially limiting thoughts and beliefs. And then that can also influence then our feelings. I'd like to have you explore with me, what are the problem feelings that you feel, the troublesome feelings? Let's just make kind of a list of what do you think personal or in general people's, the troublesome kinds of feelings that we trip over and cause us problems.
Insecurity.
Okay.
Are you on here? Guilt.
Jealousy.
I thought jealousy would be good in green.
You can finally see what's being written.
Yeah, I thought that red one was darker when I used it before, but it seems to be dying. Other problem emotions?
Shame.
Okay.
Resentment. Depression.
Mm-hmm. Depression is actually a bunch of feelings. Which is one of the parts of depression.
Confusion.
Okay.
Loneliness.
Okay.
And if you go ahead and go up the wanting to control.
I'm sorry, letting go?
Letting go of wanting to control others. Situation.
Okay, I'm trying to think of how I put that as an emotion.
Manipulativeness.
But the process of letting go is the difficult part.
Yeah, the wanting to be in control, I suppose, is the difficult one.
Okay, that's what wanting control.
Is that a compulsion?
It can be.
Mm-hmm. Like with your children's lives.
Mm-hmm.
You're not doing what I trained them.
And then feeling resentment and feeling anger at them.
So maybe feeling fear with that.
Okay. Self-pity.
Frustration.
Okay, if we think about these emotions as problem emotions, and we think about, well, okay, so I'm feeling jealousy, so I'm feeling resentment, so I'm feeling fear. What am I going to do now? Think of it as a step, as a message to yourself, as a step I need to take. I need to allow myself that, yes, this is true. I do feel this way. It's absolutely right on. My gauge is telling me this. But now what do I need to do? Should we take one of these? Let's take anger, if that's okay. Because anger is actually a secondary emotion. It doesn't feel that way when you feel it. Actually, anger is kind of a red hot, warm kind of emotion. You know, people's face gets flushed and their ears get red too sometimes. Anger is a warm, right now, present emotion. If you stuff it, if you suppress anger, you get a very cold hostility, which is quite a bit different. Actually, that anger is a very alive kind of feeling. And for people that are depressed, what you want them to do is to get angry. You want them to flip over into anger because there's an aliveness about anger. And it's almost, it's really preferable to a really cold, cynical, hostile kind of feeling. But anger is not the primary feeling. There are feelings behind it. Should we say what some of those are?
Fear.
Okay, it's an important one.
Hurt.
Okay.
Being dominated.
Okay. I think this marker's dying. Okay, somebody has control over you, dominates you, and you feel angry.
Loss.
Loss. Okay, anger's a part of that.
Shame.
Okay. How about being discounted? Feeling vulnerable.
Maybe discounting of yourself, your own feelings. So discount that.
Okay, either by discounted by somebody else or discounting yourself. Let's see. I went to a person that does court mandated anger control, and some of the other ones that he suggested were feeling insecure, feeling frustrated, feeling unlistened to, ignored, threatened, inadequate, vulnerable. Did I put that down? Yeah. Embarrassed, rejected, humiliated, taken advantage of, treated unfairly. Well, the point of all this is that if you're feeling angry, first of all, to say, whoops, this is it, I can feel it, my gauge is going up on anger, a little red flag. But secondly, to identify what am I feeling that caused me to feel secondarily angry. And that's a way of knowing yourself, reading yourself, fine-tuning your gauges, is finding out, what am I feeling before I felt the anger? What is this anger all about? Because then you can take the step to rectify it or take the action that you need. If you're angry, you can deal with the angry feelings, but you're not going to be able to figure out what to do about the situation until you identify what is that feeling behind that. So then you can decide how you're going to express the anger. And that's, like I said, some people that link up aggression or violence with their anger have to find other ways to express the anger that's more healthy before they can even take the action. You have to cool off. And then you can figure out what to do to take the action. What I'd like to do is let you spend some time talking with each other, because I think that's the most helpful thing, about an emotion. And you can pick any of these that you might particularly feel you want to get more of a handle on. And one of the ways to begin to help yourself with an emotion that might be causing you a problem is to think about, when in my childhood did I feel this way? What situations can I remember from my childhood that I felt this way, and these feelings? Let's say it's fear. You don't like to be fearful. When do I remember in my childhood that I was fearful? What kind of situations? I think I forgot to leave my masking tape here. So I want you to pick an emotion. Think about times in your childhood when you felt that way. What was that experience like? What did you do? What did other people do? And how is your experience of that emotion now as an adult? And what do you do now with it? So I would encourage you to pick an emotion that maybe you're a little more unsorted out about, that you'd like to get some feedback with somebody about it, and explore back in your mind your childhood or other experiences, teenage, early adulthood, when you had that feeling. What did it feel like then, and what happened to you then, and how are you bringing that same pattern to how you experience that emotion at this time? Groups of about five work really well, but be sure that you include people around you if it doesn't come out even. So I'd like you to get together and for about 10 or 15 minutes to explore that, and then I'd like to wrap it up at the end. I'll try and get this up, a way to get this up so that you remember those questions. I can do is use this tape maybe.
Borrow a couple of those tax pillows.
Oh, okay. Well, I can just stick this on top of it. Mm-hmm. Okay, any questions about what I want you to do? I want you to think through an emotion that you might want some help with, to do some sorting. Think about it as a child, how you felt that way, when, what the situation was like, what it, the experience was, and what people did, what you did. For me, for example, when I was sad as a child, if I wanted to pick sadness, when I was sad as a child, what I did is I went to my room. And so most people didn't know I was sad because I didn't share it with anybody. So now when I experience sadness as an adult, I'm very inclined to do the same thing. But I'm working at not doing that. And if I were in a group, I would share with you some things about that. Is that clear, what I want you to do? Okay, get in groups of five. Switch your chairs around. Okay, I hate to break up what is the most valuable part of our time. I'd like to end with just a few thoughts about joy, which is one of the emotions that I feel is a payoff that comes to us as a gift for dealing with life and dealing with the painful parts. And I experienced with my sisters the day that my mother died, I had no idea how hard you can laugh when you're in a very strong grieving situation. And I've heard people tell me that since, and I would never have believed it if I hadn't experienced it. And she died early in the morning, and we were trying to decide about things, all the arrangements for the service and what kind of clothes, you know, would be on her body and whatever. And we started to reminisce, and I remember we laughed so hard we couldn't even stand up. My two sisters and I tend to laugh a lot anyway, so that wasn't real unusual. But we were just absolutely sitting on the floor in gales of laughter and tears at the same time. And that experience is that when you open up the sad emotions, it's like your gauge is just, you know, the whole continuum of emotions are strong. And I think that that is a guarantee that we have, or kind of a promise, that by working with our emotions, we really experience a deeper life, a deeper sense of joy, a deeper sense of meaning, and kind of a, I would call it a vibrancy with other people. And when you've gone through a really deep grief experience, and somebody else is going through grief, and you're talking with them, they will know it. The way you hug, the way you respond, will be a message for them that you can deal with strong emotion and you have survived and it has brought a depth to your life that you can share. So to go back to the idea of joy, I think as children we all were very capable of joy. But growing up, I think we sometimes get socialized to not express it, to tone down that sense of joy that we had as children. And I think the sense of joy that God gives us as humans and wants us to use. So just to allow ourselves that joy, I'd like to read for you some affirmations and encourage you to allow all the joy that is in your life to come and to warm you. So just take these in. Today I will look for joy wherever it can be found. It's okay to be excited and let others know it. I deserve to be happy and feel good about myself. I can be a source of joy for others. I will allow others to bring joy to me. I will pay attention to the child within me. I rejoice in my laughter and the laughter of others. I accept joy into my life. Thanks for all the sharing that you did. Thank you.